This is Jack from Mass Effect. Take your balls out of your purse and listen up to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. And I say okay because I don't want to use Matt's all right.
No, no. I hate to take that from him.
I know. So I'm going to
That's all he has.
So I'm going to go with okay. So on this special episode of the Rated NA podcast, we have some interviews for you today that Ash recorded at San Diego Comic-Con this past weekend. How's it going, Ash?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty good.
We missed you much out there.
I know. We were talking
about it. And we were like, oh, we wish Scott was here, but... We have many more cons in the next like month, so
this
you'll be conned
true.
Out.
Yeah, unfortunately, I could not go, but let's talk about what's going on here.
So I just I landed last night, and so I'm still super sleepy. And we were at the con, and we had a great time. Matt was there, Hillary was there, working at BioWare pretty much the entire time. And I was there walking around, and I carried around a mic with me and ran into some folks that I thought were interesting and did some quick impromptu interviews with them. And so we're going to be sharing those with everyone. And we have, of course, David Gator, who is one of the main writers of the Dragon Age franchise. We have some of the ladies of Team Unicorn, who are incredibly creative and awesome and fun. And they are huge fans of conventions like we are. So we talked to them for a bit, and they're great. And we talked to the voice actress of Jack, Courtney Taylor, who was super fun. And I can't wait to get her and Allie Hillis and maybe Jennifer Hale in a room together all at the same time and just have an absolute voice acting blowout.
But, oh my God, that would be amazing.
That may have to come a little bit later, but I'm working on it. And then last but not least, I did record some audio from the Firefly panel and also the Firefly press conference, which was both of those were amazing experiences. So we're going to go through all of those, and you'll hear all those on this special, I guess this is what, 67?
Yeah, episode 67? I think this will technically be 67, and I have to number these because I'm OCD. So this one's going to get a number.
The more numbers, the better. Like,
yeah.
If I could just add a number, like number 69, it's just a fart sound.
Yeah.
Like, let's keep those numbers going. It makes us sound better.
But the thing I wanted to preview that I thought was pretty amazing is that you actually got to ask a question at the Firefly press conference that followed the actual like the panel, right?
Yeah. So yeah, do you want to start with the Firefly stuff?
Or no. I'm just
okay.
Teasing.
So I did, and I'll talk about how crazy that experience was, I guess, when we get there. But I did get to ask Joss and the panel a question about video games, and it was nerve-wracking but awesome. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Considering that was only about a 15-minute interview, or at least what it looked like in the video I saw, that was pretty amazing. So.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was crazy.
Stay tuned. That will be coming up later in the podcast. So let's start with David Gator from Dragon Age.
Cool. So David Gator, we actually set up the interview really through Dark Horse, because he was there promoting both Silent Grove and some of the other stuff he's done for Dark Horse. And so we got a chance to talk with him at preview night. And for those that don't know about Comic-Con, preview night happens the Wednesday before Comic-Con starts, and the tickets for that are very limited, and you get to kind of walk around and actually, see everything get set up and maybe talk to people. And David Gator was cool to talk to us for a bit about all sorts of Dragon Age stuff, and he was awesome, incredibly brilliant guy, a lot of fun, and he actually was the inspiration for the Firefly question that I asked, but we'll talk about that later.
Cool, let's go to the interview.
All right, we're here with David Gator, who is one of the creative geniuses behind the Dragon Age franchise, and we have a lot of questions to ask him, some of which are from our community. So let's go ahead and get started. David, why don't you introduce yourselves to our audience?
Sure. My name's David Gator. I'm the lead writer for the Dragon Age series for BioWare. I've been with the company for about 13 years now. I started back in the days of Baldur's Gate 2 Moved on to Never Tonight's Knights of the Old Republic, and most recently Dragon Age. So.
Awesome, awesome. So for those of you who are listening at home, we're here at San Diego Comic-Con 2012, which is why it's kind of loud. This is preview night, and already there's probably, 30,000 people-ish?
Yeah, it's strange. Preview night here is about the crowd level you get at most cons. They're regular nights, I think.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So like myself, you've been traveling all day, and you're a little bit tired, so we're going to do our best to have some fun questions here. And some of these are from our community. The first one is actually from me. And I was curious because I've read all the books, and I read the recent graphic novel Silent Grove, and I'm kind of curious how you are when Dragon Age 3 finally does get officially announced, because it's not officially announced yet, and that's sort of like the wink, wink, nudge, nudge joke. When it does officially get announced, how are you planning on incorporating some of the characters from your expanded universe, or are you planning on incorporating some of your characters from your expanded universe, or would you like to?
Well, there's a limited amount you can do just because... some of the events that were in the comic or in the third novel, especially Asunder, required that we had to take sort of a snapshot of the game universe, which was if certain decisions had been made. Now it's possible that some of those events might have happened similarly in other playthroughs. If the player, you know, a book we can't import choices, but a game we can. So we intend to continue doing that. So it's possible that in a player's particular game world with his choices, the events might have happened a little bit differently, but we might keep them that they happened, some version of the event happened. So we're trying to incorporate them without saying, oh, yeah, Wynn was definitely involved in the events of Asunder, or Alistair had to be king. Like, no, we're not doing that.
Excellent. I really liked Lambert. I thought he was a total awesome villain, so I hope you guys bring him back. So we had a question from one of our readers who said, you've created a large number of strong female protagonists/characters. Where did you draw your inspiration for these strong female characters? Because you are known for having some of the most amazing and strong and most realistic female characters, I believe, in gaming currently. So where do you draw that inspiration from?
Well, where do I draw inspiration? I mean, I wouldn't say it's only me. I mean, I'm the lead writer, but I have a team of writers, many of whom are girls. Actually, right now, we have 7 writers. Only myself and Luke Christensen are actually guys on the team. So we have a strong female voice, and that's cool. And I think that part of I think, I mean, I don't think we set out and said, you know, we need to make strong female characters. I just think maybe that's just a byproduct of having... more female representation on the team who can, you know, keep us from doing things unintentionally. Because I think bad portrayals of female characters in games or any kind of entertainment come about mostly as a result, I think, of having very limited viewpoints involved in their creation, right? I think for the girls on our team, especially, they just want female characters that are kick-ass just like the guys, right? So, sure, why not? I mean, speaking personally, in terms of female characters that inspire me, I think I personally come from the Ripley mode of action heroes. For me, that is the action heroine for me. And I think I've ever since the days of Alien and Aliens, I've always held this abiding love of the kick-ass female heroine. So for me, that's why I like it. But I think the reason that. Maybe our characters tend to end up being better represented, if you will. People can make arguments either way, I'm sure. But the reason that we do it better is just because we have more viewpoints on the team that can tell us when we're doing it wrong.
Cool. Great answer. Ripley is probably one of my favorite female heroines as well. Aliens is probably right up there on the top of my list. Favorite films of all time. So
I can recite dialogue.
Oh, absolutely. Off topic for 2 seconds. When my bachelor party, we were driving around in a limousine, and I actually brought Aliens with me, and we watched it in the limo. So that's how much I love that movie. So one of our other community questions was from NHales80, and he says, has the ever-growing amount of choice in your games allowed you to expand your creativity? I guess he's asking if having branching dialogue options and player choice, does that actually allow you to be more creative as a writer, or is it perhaps, does it inhibit you?
It could do both. I mean, it certainly sometimes requires us to come up with creative solutions to deal with, like, okay, how are we going to have reactivity to that? Sometimes it limits us, and sometimes it's like, we want to do have, you know, the kind of reactivity that, I mean, some people just expect. They make their decision. And I mean, the sort of go-to default is you kind of, deep down, you want that decision to have the equivalent of, now it's an entirely new story and I'm doing, okay, there are limitations that prevent us from doing that sometimes. So really, it's trying to be creative and sort of figuring out a breadth of things like, okay, this will have definitely a big reaction. This will have acknowledgement, but maybe not a lot of reaction. And this, well, sometimes you can't, right? And you have to sort of maintain the story. And I mean, there are fans who will come down on any side of the argument from one end to the other. But from a writing standpoint, sometimes it's like it inspires us like to do it as well as we can, and that's part of. It's part of the shtick, right? I mean, this is supposed to be an RPG. This is supposed to be something that has lets the player feel like they have agency. Agency is what a RPG is all about. Sometimes we do it better than others, but that is the idea. So it is always us trying to work with that and have it as much as possible. Sure.
All right, we're almost done here.
Oh, sure.
Barbaro says, "Did Alistair ever really love us?"
You know, there's a story. I don't know the reason. I know it. I know where she's coming from. There was in Awakening, the expansion for Dragon Age Origins. There was a throwaway item that you could find, which was a wedding trophy or piece of memorabilia from the King Kaelin and Queen Honora wedding. And so a fan picked that up, and even though the text didn't say Alistair, they just assumed it said Alistair and Honora, and that we had overridden her decision to marry Alistair. So she flew onto our forums and said, "Oh my God, I can't believe you overrode my decision to marry Alistair. How could you do this to me?" And my response was, because you know what else can I say? I said, "Well, the answer is Alistair never loved you."
And I don't think she was very happy with that. That's great. And here's one for me. I loved Asunder. I especially loved the relationship between Wynn and Shale. And my question was, is there a possibility that we might see Shale return in either, you know, graphic novel or, you know, something from Dark Horse? And if she does come back, is there ever a chance she'll be returned back to her dwarven form? Because that seemed to be a quest she was sort of on, sort of in the background.
I remember Shale was one we actually wanted to put into DA2. And it was one of the late hour cuts that I was like, oh, you feel that when that happens. But I wrote Shale myself, so I've always wanted to bring her back. That's why I put her in Asunder. Whether or not we could bring her into the games again, I mean, like we were planning on doing it in DA2. She was going to appear if she hadn't died. It was possible for her to die in Origins, which makes it a little tough. When characters can die, it causes the kind of divergence where either the character just isn't there, in which case the player is importing something and gets no content, or they need like something divergent, like it's a hand wave because, well, then it's not Shale, but it's some other golem. Shale's pretty unique. That would be kind of a hard to swallow, I suppose. But I mean, certainly in like a novel or a comic, again, since you'd have to take a snapshot, like, okay, in this case, Shale is alive, and say, like in Asunder, Shale was actually looking on a quest to become human again, right? So I think that would be a cool thing to sort of follow up on. Shale versus the pigeons, yes. An epic tale for the ages, right?
Or like a one-shot mini comic.
Yeah, well, mini comic. She's a big girl, so I love that.
We are all done. Thank you so much, David Gator, for hanging out and talking to us.
Sure.
Yeah, one of the cool things about that interview is we actually took some Twitter questions right before the interview started. And these interviews are kind of crazy because the schedule of Comic-Cons, it's intense and you never really know. You may have something locked down, an interview locked down, but anything can change on the fly. So it was awesome, you know, actually getting some listener questions and asking them to David. And it was cool. So it was interesting to see how our audio turned out as well, because it was actually done on the Comic-Con floor from the Dark Horse booth. So it wasn't like in some nice, you know, dark, secluded interview room. There was like literally thousands of people watching me conduct this interview.
I'm sure it was like a madhouse that night, you know?
It was definitely a madhouse, but it was cool.
Yeah, and what's really cool is that David Gator is like an incredibly nice dude and very, very friendly on Twitter. Like, it's really exciting. It's like really exciting stuff to be able
He's awesome. Yeah. And he's such a fan of all the stuff that we are fans of. I mean, like, he gets excited when he sees, you know, the voice actors, and he gets excited when he sees, you know, people from Firefly. So he's, you know, he's definitely one of us. He just happens to be a genius writer who's insanely creative and made up some awesome stuff that we love.
Cool. Well, good times. Let's move on. Your next next interview is going to be with the ladies from Team Unicorn.
Yeah. So Team Unicorn was actually at Comic-Con this year promoting Voltron, and on top of a ton of other stuff. I mean, they're there. They have their own clothing line now. They have a lot of their own stuff to promote. But they were there for Voltron, and we actually set up the interview through Voltron. And Team Unicorn, we actually have a little bit of history with them on the podcast. We interviewed them, gosh, almost 2 years ago at this point. They were one of our very early interviews. And they've always been really supportive of us and always really cool. And it's gotten to the point where they, like, you know, actually say hi to us when we run into them in shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so it's nice. Yeah, they're just incredibly creative, fun, nice group of ladies that really love, you know, pop culture and video games and animation and toys. And so we talked to Michelle Boyd and Claire Grant and Arlia Vanderbilt about their con so far and some of their convention memories and all sorts of fun stuff like that. And we actually are going to see them again at Star Wars Celebration. So, Scott, you'll have a chance to hang out and talk to them.
Nice. At Star Wars Celebration. Yeah, and maybe our readers might remember that you got your ass kicked in Magic by them as well.
I did, yeah. I played Rylea in Magic the Gathering at PAX East this year, and she kicked my ass. So one of these days I'll get a rematch.
Cool. Well, let's go ahead and check out the interview.
So I'm here with Team Unicorn, and we were at San Diego Comic-Con 2012. I want to hear what you guys have been up to, and since this microphone is, we just have one, we're going to hand it around. So what have you guys been doing so far? It's only Thursday, and I'm already tired. How about you?
I mean, I'm pretty tired. I got a good night's sleep last night, but I went around and secured every single Comic-Con exclusive toy that I planned on. So that was my day yesterday. Today, I've been hanging out with Team Unicorn. Just did the Voltron panel. It was awesome.
It was pretty cool. You like that little kid with the full Voltron armor?
Yeah, he was my favorite.
He was pretty amazing. Yeah, I saw all the pictures you put up on Instagram of your toy procurement. Yeah, it was insane. It was like incredible. I used to collect toys too, so I love stuff.
I got no sleep last night, and I've just kind of been walking around.
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, that happens.
That is amazing.
That happened. Just George R. R. Martin sits down next to you at the bar, because yeah, that sort of thing just happens. So today, I was really only concerned about getting this Comic-Con exclusive Lock and Key hardcover that just came out today. So I got that, and I'm good, and I still haven't hit Hasbro yet. I need to see if I need to get that new My Little Pony, and that's about it.
There's a pretty big My Little Pony presence here this year. I remember...
There's two exclusive ponies this year. Let's get that straight. There's an Entertainment Earth and a Toys R Us exclusive pony, where it's Zakara, where she's a zebra, and then there's... Yes, and that's at the regular Hasbro booth.
Let's see. I ran around the floor yesterday a little bit before they opened because I got one of those awesome volunteer badges. I'm like, I'm going to run around, which was super fun. And then I got a couple things, and that's basically it. Just did the Voltron panel, and today our crazy starts, and then it doesn't end until Sunday. So
today at 4 p.m., Team Unicorn will be signing at the Brown Coats booth.
Oh, cool. Well, hopefully I get down there.
And if you miss today's signing, we are signing Saturday again at the Brown Coats booth as well.
Oh, cool. I'll tweet that out for you guys and hopefully. So I'm supposed to ask you guys about Voltron because that's why they invited me here. And growing up, I was a huge Voltron fan. I watched it every morning before, like, middle school, before I would go to middle school and get my butt kicked. And I loved it. I haven't really watched the new Voltron. I'm going to be honest. You have?
I've seen every episode.
Is it good?
I love it. Really? And I was really skeptical because I've been a Voltron fan my whole life. It was actually, Keith was my very first crush.
Okay.
I'm sure. Yeah. Who wouldn't? Right? Hot.
But I love the new Voltron Force. It's really fun. It's really awesome. And you get into the mythology of Voltron and the special power that, like, courses through the veins of Voltron and makes it happen. And every lion gets to be the head. And when that lion gets to be the head, they get a new awesome weapon that is specific to their forte of expertise. Yes.
Next generation.
Yes, and it still has the original Voltron team, but then there are three new recruits. And so it's the recruits being trained to take over one specific lion. Voltron Padawans. And they all three have one of the new Vents has these special powers where he is he's connected to Voltron, so he can manipulate the magical force that actually makes Voltron work with his hands and with his mind. It is awesome.
That's incredible. So you're a huge fan of Voltron. Yeah, my mom actually did. I had one of those moms that actually threw away my Voltron stuff. I never had the full lion because we didn't have enough cash to get the full lion, but I had about half the lion and she threw them out.
I had that plastic little 6-inch one that you couldn't take apart. It was just the plastic. It didn't move. Nothing happened. It just stood there and looked like a plastic Voltron.
Yes. So you guys are sort of notorious for cosplaying here at Comic-Con, and I think... first time I saw you guys here, you guys were Sailor Scouts.
Yes.
And that was awesome. And then last year, you guys were the Night Sisters from Star Wars, Clone Wars. And that was awesome. Any hints?
Yeah, we'll give it away.
This won't air until like a couple week from now.
Can I spoil it? Can I do that?
You can do it off the record and just tell me because I'm just curious.
Okay. The Silver Age comic poster. We are cosplaying as a superhero.
We're cosplaying as ourselves.
We're sort of cheating a little bit.
I don't think we're cheating.
I think we're awesome. Yeah. We get to run around being superheroes that we created for ourselves. Spread the love.
My wife actually liked that poster so much. My wife liked that poster so much that she actually put it up in the house. So.
I put a beautiful frame around that poster. It makes me so happy every day.
Put out so far. The For the Win one. I love it.
I put that one in my gaming room.
You have a game. It's so awesome. You have a gaming room. So what are your big plans for, like, what is the one thing you really, really want to see at this year's Comic-Con?
For me, the cons are all about the toy exclusives and getting to see my friends who I don't really get to see very often and then getting to check out the awesome costumes. So knocked out the toys, spending time with my friends, and I'm waiting for Saturday to... That's usually when the best costumes are.
Honestly, I'm looking forward to stuff like the Mass Effect panel. I love that Nerd Machine has their own like conversations and panels because I lucked out. I had a friend that was able to get me into the Joss one, so I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to Woodstock. I love all of the events and things that happen at Comic-Con.
There's a whole lot of off-site stuff this year, more than ever before, and I can't even keep up.
It's off-site, yeah, Nerd Machine, everything. It's going to be so much fun.
I always come, I always enjoy myself. The costumes are one of the best things for me. Just the feeling everyone gets coming to Comic-Con, and it's like there's no weirdos here. It's just, there's a lot of love in the air. Not really into any of the panels this year. The one I really want to see, actually, no, sorry, I should say this. I'm putting out good vibes to the universe. I'm using the secret that I'm going to end up running into Matt Smith, who's Doctor Who right now, this weekend, and we're going to become BFFs. So if I was to say I'm excited about any panel, it's Doctor Who panel. If I can get in, I might have to talk to Chris Hardwick since he's moderating it and try to get into that. But I have a feeling, I'm going to be hanging out with Amy Pond and the Doctor sometime this weekend. It's going to happen. Maybe not at a panel, but maybe just in real life. Maybe I'll just be at a bar drinking and, you know, it happens.
It happens.
So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, ladies of Team Unicorn, and we will talk to you hopefully at the next convention. Thank you. Thanks.
Cool. Well, they're always a lot of fun. You can check out their website, teamunicornftw.com, and they are Team Unicorn FTW on Twitter as well. You know, they're always hustling. They're working all sorts of new stuff. And again, we will see them and talk to them again at Star Wars Celebration. So thanks again, Team Unicorn. You ladies are awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to meet them. And maybe this would be a good time to quickly mention that at least the two of us will be at Star Wars Celebration in sunny Orlando. I think, what is that, in September?
Like last week of August, September, something August, like that.
I think it's actually like the weekend. It's either the weekend before or after PAX Prime.
We are going to be some tired dudes.
Yeah, super, super busy.
Which is great.
Well, let's move on to a little Mass Effect action.
Yes.
You got to talk to Courtney Taylor, who is Jack in Mass Effect.
Yeah, so Courtney Taylor, you know, we've had a lot of requests ever since we did our Allie Hillers interview, a while ago now. A lot of people are like, you have to interview Courtney Taylor. You have to interview her. She's so much fun. And, you know, when you don't live in Los Angeles and you live on the East Coast, getting interviews with these people, you know, over Skype or whatever can be a real challenge. So every once in a while, just the stars align. And we didn't actually have this one lined up until we got to San Diego. And we just set this one up through Twitter, and it worked out pretty well. And Courtney Taylor ended up being an absolute blast. So she's been voice acting for like 10 years. Maybe even longer. And she's done voices in stuff like Knights of the Old Republic and Diablo 3. She's going to be voicing, or she is voicing, Ada Wong in the Resident Evil series, Resident Evil 6. But everybody knows her as Jack, and her performance as Jack is just, you know, incredibly awesome. So we sat down and talked to her for a while, and she was great.
I also saw that there was like a flurry of direct messages trying to coordinate and get everything set up.
Yes. Well, you know, it was really nobody's fault, but the problem is there are two different Hiltons in San Diego that are about, I don't know, half a mile apart. And yeah. The BioWare base is in one Hilton, and Courtney was in the other Hilton, and we were trying to, you know, find a place to meet and everything. And I'm like, well, I'm already at the BioWare base. I'll meet you here. And she's like, I'm standing where the BioWare base is supposed to be. But she was actually in the incorrect Hilton. So.
Oh, my God. We call that bad human factors.
Yes, but so we got her to the BioWare base, and this interview was really cool because we actually did it inside the BioWare base before it opened, so it was, you know, super dark, and the cool thing about it was set up like the Purgatory. Is that no? What's the name?
Afterlife.
Club? Afterlife. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, set up like the Afterlife nightclub, and right as we were finishing up the interview, both Kimberly Williams, who plays Ashley, and Raphael Sabarge came in, who plays, of course, Caden Olenko. And we got to talk to them for a couple seconds as well. So it was awesome. It was an awesome interview, and she's a lot of fun. And again, you know, I can't wait to sit her down with Allie Hillis and have a full time.
That's amazing. Did you gush at all to Raphael Sabarge about once as well while you were there?
Actually, I did. The really funny thing is, 2 seconds before I met Raphael Sabarge, my wife sent me a text message. Christina sent me a text message. She's like, look who I just met. And it was a picture of her and Raphael Sabarge. And she had just run into him on the Comic-Con floor where I guess he was doing a signing or something.
Oh, that's amazing.
So when I met him, I'm like, hey, you just met my wife. And I showed him the picture and he started laughing. And then I just, you know, talked to him about his roles and how much we love Once Upon a Time and stuff like that. So he, you know, he was one of the coolest guys that I've met at these conventions. He was just such a nice, nice dude, and really, really impressed by him.
Sweet. That's a pretty awesome tidbit of information. I wanted to ask one more thing before we get to the Courtney Taylor interview. Did they play the music from the game in the after, you know, like the music that you hear in the Afterlife Lounge? Did they play that same music at the BioWare base, or was there any music at all?
You know what's really sad, man, and I'm kind of ashamed to say this, I never got to actually hang out in the power base for more than about 5 minutes.
Oh, because no.
I was so busy. Yeah. And my logic was, well, since Hillary was there for like 50 hours, she would sort of be the one who's going to supply us with a lot of the BioWare base stories. So I'm hoping that she actually remembers what happened.
All right. Fair enough. Well, for our listeners, we'll be doing a regular podcast in the next episode with Matt and Hillary. We'll talk specifics about San Diego Comic-Con, but in the meantime, let's go ahead and listen to that interview with Courtney Taylor.
Okay, so we are here at San Diego Comic-Con 2012. It is a warm, what is it, Saturday afternoon? Yeah, it's a Saturday afternoon, and we are here with actress Courtney Taylor, who's the voice of Jack in Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3, and also the voice of Ada Wong in the upcoming Resident Evil 6. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. After getting lost all over downtown San Diego, I'm much better now.
So it is confusing because there are two Hiltons. And a lot of my friends and yourself also got confused as to which Hilton the BioWare base was in. And so there's a little bit of wandering, but you made it, and we're glad that you're here.
In like four pieces instead of one, but yeah.
Awesome, awesome. So when did you arrive in San Diego, and how often do you do conventions and go to conventions and such?
I got here Thursday night. I had to go back up to Los Angeles for work, for a video game during Comic-Con. And then I came back down last night, and this is the second time I've been to Comic-Con, but I haven't been for the last couple of years. So I have not been to very many conventions. I am looking forward to doing more in the future, so just kind of exploring that and figuring out how it all works.
Cool. You should definitely check out PAX. It's like completely just game related. It's a bit smaller. I think this is 120,000. PAX is like 30 or 40.
Oh, yay, PAX. Yeah. Come to PAX.
PAX is pretty fun. So your career is pretty amazing. You've done almost every game that I think I've played. So, I mean, from dating back to Knights of the Old Republic to recently Diablo 3, Star Wars The Old Republic, it's huge. So, how has voice acting, and this is such a generic question, I apologize, how has voice acting really changed over the course of the past decade?
Well, voice acting for games, I think it's so much more, you know, story-driven now. So it's not that really that it hasn't really changed for me. I mean, I've always been doing my thing, but I think that it's, you know, how we get to work is much more nuanced, and like the storylines give us so much more to work with. So I think it's been great to let voice actors kind of spread their wings more, where, you know, it used to be the dialogue was more limited and the storylines were narrower. And now, I mean, it's like awesome movie trilogies and things, you know, that are, I mean, I feel so lucky to have been able to play Jack because she's got, I think, one of the best, you know, kind of storylines. And
awesome. That's actually the segue to my next question. So when you first saw the script and you started, I'm assuming you auditioned for Jack.
Yes.
And when you first got the script for Jack, what did you think of the character? Because she's kind of unique to gaming. I don't think I've ever really encountered a character like her for a lot of reasons. So what did you think when you first read Jack?
I was excited because I mean, I didn't know her story kind of unfolded to me. And so it was kind of like every session was like another whole like thing of like all these new scenarios, finding out, you know, all this backstory on her. And I think, you know, like I was lucky, like even like playing Juhani in Knights of the Old Republic, she also had this kind of like pull of light and dark and good and evil. And so I'm kind of drawn to those kind of characters anyway. And so I felt like I hit the jackpot with Jack. And, you know, when I saw her picture, I was like, ah, so great. Like, she didn't have, you know, she's not the classic big boobs, big hair, you know, kind of action figure. Not that there's anything wrong with those, but it was just so refreshing to see someone who looked different and had this whole kind of different perspective on things and different way of dealing with people. So I was psyched.
There's actually a segue to one of our community questions. Justin Banks asks, what version of Jack did you like better, the Mass Effect 2 Jack, who was essentially naked with some duct tape on, or the Mass Effect 3 Jack, who's a little bit more refined and actually has some hair?
Hi, Justin. I liked I think I liked the second incarnation of Jack in two, because the first one, she had, there was very little clothing on her, and then they kind of redesigned her a little bit, and I liked that. I thought she looked pretty cool and punk rock, and I liked Jack in three as well. I just thought that the Mass Effect 2 one was so, like, different than anything I had seen, and she's still amazing looking in three, and I do love that they picked a hairstyle for her that wasn't too refined, you know, like, it was still punk rock, you know, cool. But yeah, I think 2.0 Jack and two.
Cool. Excellent. Great answer. So the thing I would like to know is, Jack had an interesting, well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much. Hold on while Courtney pops over. Yeah,
no worries.
Second monster of the day.
I'm in the same boat.
Would you like to share my
story? I'm okay. Thank you so much. Actually, I swore off energy drinks for about a month, and I was, and then I just, when I got here, I was like, screw that. Yeah, I was like, screw that.
And I don't ever drink them. Yeah. Except for in these situations. Like, those are poison.
Yeah.
You shouldn't drink those. This is really bad for you. You know what taurine does to you? And then I'm like.
What does taurine do to you? Because I have it like coursing through my veins at all times, most of the time.
Nothing good. Drink lots of water. Take lots of vitamins when you get home and get lots of rest. But you know what? We all get a free pass during Comic-Con.
Yeah, indeed. So, like I was saying, Jack had a bit of a transition from Mass Effect 2 to Mass Effect 3. And first of all, from my opinion, I was a huge Jack fan. I loved Jack in Mass Effect 2. I was like, I felt for her because she had such like this troubled past, and you could kind of see underneath that rough exterior, there was like someone who just like really wanted a friend, you know, that's at least how I felt, and she was an incredible character, and in three, of course, she changes a lot. So when you got the script for three, what did you think about that, her changes, sort of becoming a teacher and a mentor and a protector of kids, which was not really where I expected her to go.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, once you, I was glad that they didn't, you know, like, I mean, I felt like she had to go somewhere, she couldn't just be the same character in the next game. But I really tried not to think about where they were going to go with, you know, like I didn't want to be like, oh, she's going to do this and then get it and be disappointed or be like, oh, that's not, you know, because I was going to have to do what was on the page. So I was actually really kind of pleasantly surprised that they brought it back to a place of like, you know, ultimately someone who was so badly abused when she, and so unprotected when she was a kid, you know, being in charge of these young people. I thought, I wish that it had gone on longer, you know, but I thought they, yeah.
I was like, where's Jack?
Yeah.
The dancing scene. I was like, this is probably one of my favorite scenes in the entire game was the dancing scene. Where
yeah.
She dances with Shepard. I was like, that's great.
Yeah. I just, I thought they did it, you know, I totally cried in the booth finishing up Jack. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm going to miss this character so much.
We're all going to miss that character. Hopefully we'll pull some strings. We'll get you back in there as Jack.
You know, BioWare listens.
They do. They really do.
They're awesome like that.
They are.
So the next question is from our community, and this is at Stumpy Nat on Twitter. And she says, I swear I hear her all the time in Star Wars The Old Republic. What roles or how many roles did you have in that game?
Oh, that's a good question. that is a really good question, and I need to, you know, pay more attention because we do a lot of, like, incidental voices and stuff, so it's hard to answer. But I don't know. You know what? That's a really good question. I don't know how many characters I played.
A lot.
yeah, you know, like sometimes, I mean, we go in and like, we'll just pick up little characters and stuff here and there. And so, you know, unless there's something like has a storyline to it, sometimes, you know, like as much as I should, I try not to like go and do too much research.
Plus,
either.
I think I saw Jennifer Hale speak, and she said that the script for Star Wars Old Republic was like 8 phone books thick. So it's probably.
And they change the names of characters. Like a lot of times they'll, you know, some of the games that I've done, I still don't know what they're called because now they have code names and stuff because all the fans got all tricky and started hunting stuff down. And so they, you know, I've done stuff where they've been, you know, it's like Project X. I'm like, Project X again? All right, great. And the, you know, the character names change, or, you know, they're just generic and then they name them. So depends.
So you are playing the sort of mysterious and often evil Ada Wong in, you played her actually in Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, and now you're playing her in Resident Evil 6, which is coming out pretty soon. Tell us a little bit about playing Ada, because she is a fan favorite. People love Ada Wong because no one really knows what the hell she's up to.
And she's hot.
And, yeah, that's you know, all of us fanboys love that. So let's talk a little bit about her.
Okay, what's the question?
Oh, so when you got the role of Ada Wong, I hear there's a lot of cinematics in Resident Evil 6. Was it a lot just like, was it different than playing Jack?
Yeah, apparently, like, that was one of the reasons that, I guess, that they had were interested in having me read for Ada, because they liked what I did with Jack, which I thought was kind of cool to have, like, Jack lead to Ada.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're, you know, kind of different. I mean, I didn't really know about Ada, and I was really happy to play someone who's more sophisticated, and, you know, it was a really different, like, headspace to be in.
Because Jack is, yeah, she's me. Like, yeah, Jack's a bit of a punk.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're a bit of a punk.
I am.
Yeah.
And Jack was, like, instinctual, and Ada took more finesse. It was more, like, thinking about, you know, holding yourself differently and thinking differently and just the words coming out of your mouth differently. Whereas Jack, like, I could have, you know, I was just like, oh, it's like I would have written it. Great. She talks like I talk. So
awesome. Awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing you as Ada Wong. We ask this question of everyone we interview, and it's sort of our nerd appropriate signature question. No, but the question is, what is your secret? Well, not super secret, because you don't have to tell us, but your secret nerdy hobby or passion. Like, what do you collect? What do you like to watch? What are you into?
Floaty pens.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've even seen one of those in so many years.
I have a huge collection of floaty pens from all over the world. I love floaty pens. I've collected them for, since, like, I don't know, like, probably 15 years, and my friends bring them back from all over the world for me. My sister collects them for me. I have it's a great date killer. If you ever are on a date and it's not going well, and you can just be like, hey, you want to come see my floaty pen collection? Because, yeah, it just ends the date right there.
That's incredible. I think I used to have one that was a topless lady. I think that's a fan favorite.
That's the famous one. I have one of those, but I have, like, vintage ones from, like, the 50s and, like, random places that you would never think would have a floaty pen.
Very cool. So if you're listening to this and you see that Courtney is going to be doing a signing, bring her floaty pens.
Oh, that'd be so awesome. If you don't want your floaty pens, bring them to me. I will love you forever.
Very cool. So that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And I forgot to ask you, what upcoming stuff are you allowed to talk about? Do you have anything coming up that we should keep our eyes out for that you have been working on?
I can't say no. Everything. Yeah. Almost everything is kind of top secret, but I am... I'm excited for, it's actually, I just have a cameo in it, but a friend of mine is doing a cartoon on Shut Up Cartoons called Oshi High School Battle.
Okay.
And you should keep an eye out for it, because it's kind of raunchy, kind of funny live action and animation, and the first episode dropped, I believe, yesterday. So it's on the new Smosh channel called, I think, Shut Up Cartoons. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much. So yeah, that was our interview with Courtney Taylor. And again, we're probably going to be doing some more stuff with her in the future. She is a incredibly cool individual. And we really, really enjoyed talking to her. So hopefully in the future, we'll get to do a little bit more. She loves the character of Jack. And that's what I find really amazing about a lot of these voice actors who played roles in BioWare games, is they really end up falling in love with these characters, probably because the scripts are so insanely long and they spend so much time, you know, playing these people. And plus the fans, you know, BioWare fans are some of the most passionate people on the planet. So they get so much love when
Absolutely.
They come to conventions like this that they probably can't help but love those characters. But she was great as Jack, and we have some
great audio of her swearing as Jack too that you guys will probably like.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to either include it in this one, or maybe we'll start splicing them into future podcasts. So
cool,
keep an eye out for those nuggets. Good times. Okay, so the last thing that we have coming up on today's special edition podcast is the Firefly panel and the press conference that followed after the panel.
Yeah, so this one was kind of strange because we originally, I had been working on trying to get into this press conference for a while, and it was like a invitation only, just kind of had to luck your way into it. And I was communicating with the Science Channel, who were gracious enough to let me in sort of at the last minute.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, they were really, really awesome. So a big kudos to the Science Channel for, letting me attend this. But so what we did is we went to the panel first. And in order to get into the panel was in Ballroom 20, which is the second biggest hall at the convention center.
What was the queue like for this panel?
Well, it was insane because a little weird thing, even if you're press, you still have to wait in line. But once you get inside, you can stand in the press area, which is like basically like 5 feet away from everybody. So,
wow.
Unless you're with CNN or, a huge, huge outlet, you have to wait in line like everybody else, because there still are, there are a couple hundred different outlets here in San Diego. And so they can't give them all preferential treatment or else,
Of course.
Ever done. So, so we waited in line probably from, 3.5-4 hours.
Wow.
To see Firefly. Of course, we got to sit through Community. We got to sit through Legend of Korra. Both were amazing. And then, Firefly came on next.
Oh, but you had to be a squatter in the room for pretty much the entire day, right?
Yeah, at least the entire morning, because Firefly was like midday. So the panel was amazing. As a huge fan of both Joss Whedon and Firefly, it was incredible to see the cast together again. It was amazing to see Joss, and it was probably the thing that a lot of people were in tears. He just has so much passion for this project, and the cast does as well. So when the audience started asking questions about what Firefly meant to him, it wasn't just a throwaway question, as it would be for a lot of other, a lot of other panels. It means pretty much everything to the guy. And something tells me there's some sort of rights issue that is just preventing him from making another Firefly product, because you can tell that he really, really wants to, and everyone up there really wanted to as well. So we're going to listen to some audio from that.
You kind of feel like, between him and Nathan Fillion, that the two guys probably both have enough money to liberate, if it was, even possible to liberate the license for this and just kind of do whatever they want with it,
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just let's use some of that castle money, to get this thing off the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And, they want to, to see these guys who are both grown men on stage, literally in tears, like hugging each other, because they love this thing that they created, these, 13 television episodes in a movie that thousands of people, if not millions at this point, just love, love, love dearly. It's awesome to see, and you can't help but respect them. Even if you're not a fan of the product, you can't help but respect these guys for how much they love it.
Yeah, and so here we are 10 years later. Let's take a little listen to the audio of the question near the end of the panel and the response from Joss Whedon.
Joss, just one more question for you, Joss, which is, "We're Still Flying" has become a big mantra of the fan community. If you could just put in perspective, just one last time, like, what do the fans mean to you?
actually try to follow that with a sentence. When you come out of a great movie, I'm assuming this happens to other people too, you feel like you're in that world. Like you come out of Brazil and suddenly everything is duck piping and everything is bureaucracy and everybody's weird and everything's too much. You know, you come out of these certain things and the world has become that. When you're telling a story, you are trying to connect to people in a particular way. It's not just about what you want to say. It's about inviting them into a world. And the way in which you guys have inhabited this world, this universe, have made you part of it, part of the story. You are living in Firefly. When I see you guys, I don't think the show's off the air. I don't think there's a show. I think that's what the world is like. I think there's spaceships. I think there's horses. I think it's going on in all of us. The story is alive because of you. That's what it means.
So yeah, that was the way that the Firefly panel wrapped up, and you know, it was definitely clear that everyone that was standing up on that stage had a lot of love for each other.
And, you could just feel the passion in the room. Like I saw the video; it was incredible.
You could, and you know, it's something that my wife Christina said, like, because she was out in the audience, she was one of the people that was kind of teary eyed. It's amazing that Joss can come up with answers like that on the fly. I mean, it's so articulate and so well stated. Like every one of his responses is like something that, you know, a presidential like script writer would write.
Yeah,
but he just does it so damn well. So,
and that's actually a good segue into the next bit of audio. You got to go to the press conference after the panel.
I did. So this was a different sort of experience for me. Like I've been to a couple things like this before in the past, but you know, I'm new to covering the cons. I'm not going to lie about that. And this was definitely the largest press conference that I'm part of. There were probably, you know, reporters from every single major venue in our country and also, you know, internationally as well. So you had like CNN, NBC, CBS, and then you had like sites that we follow, like, you know, Kotaku and Giant Bomb and all these. These folks were there as well. And by some fluke, when I walked into the room, because I wasn't late, I was right on time, but since I was walking, a lot of them didn't attend the panel, but I attended the panel and then ran to the press conference, like literally.
Okay.
So as I walk into the room, I just kind of stood up against the wall, but it turned out what I was standing up against was the question line.
Wow, nice done.
Yeah, so I was like back in the question line and I was like, oh fuck, I don't have a question. So as the press conference started, I started brainstorming really quickly, like, well, what can I ask? And I actually remembered a tweet that David Gator had tweeted out earlier that morning or the day before, and he said that of all the projects that he would love to work on the most, the number one project would be a Firefly game. And while I'm fully aware that the question has been addressed in the past, like a Firefly game, I was curious at that moment, specifically, how a really deep, rich, BioWare-esque Firefly RPG would be in the mind of Joss Whedon. Would he enjoy creating something like that?
Right,
and
not like an MMO, but more like a BioWare narrative-driven experience.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So yeah, I don't necessarily want an MMO, and I don't think a lot of other players do either. I'd much rather see all the voice actors return and actually you be a part of that crew in one way, shape, or form, either as a new crew member or commanding crew itself. I think would be incredible.
You could be the
but
new
anyway,
pilot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
But this was actually the response and the question at the press conference.
Hey guys, Ash from NerdAppropriate.com. I think we can all agree video games have come a really long way in the past decade. And if you guys were approached by a company like BioWare or you know, some other developer, what would you say to maybe making a Firefly-based RPG or something to that effect? Because I think we'd all love it.
I dispute the premise of your question.
well,
There was a lot of talk about a multiplayer thing and a couple of different companies vying for it, and it just sort of disappeared into the ether, and I'm not sure why. I always felt that this absolutely lends itself to gaming, and the kind of, the really immersive multiplayer gaming where there are so many planets and so many agendas and so many things to do besides shoot at things, that I think it's absolutely a perfect fit. I also think it should still be on the air. Many of my opinions are not shared by powerful people.
I can help you with that.
Maybe Sean can fund the game?
Joss, are you available?
That was pretty awesome. And the thing that you posted this on the website and I responded to it. And the thing that I mentioned was that, for a good 60 seconds there, you had the full undivided attention of a lot of the major players in the Firefly universe. You know what I mean? Like you had, 14 sets of eyeballs staring at you from that table. And I just thought that was really cool that you were able to, you got the opportunity to stand up there and ask a question and get an answer like that.
Thanks, man. Thanks. It was one of those weird convention moments that I probably won't forget. Probably ever.
how far were you from them?
I was only, maybe 15 feet from that mic, but after that, you're allowed to kind of float around freely, and I just went up and sat in the front. And if you look at our article on nerdappropriate.com, you'll see a lot of photos from that press conference, and I was, 2 feet away taking pictures. I'm not 2 feet, that's kind of creepy. Maybe 5 feet away taking pictures.
Maybe two feet from Summer Glau.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey-o.
But, hey-o. She was actually in the elevator with us, by the way.
All right.
Yeah. It's a weird weekend. But it was an incredible experience. I wouldn't change it for the world. I wish I would have gotten more time to, talk with them. But that was, that 5 minutes or whatever was a bit of a gift anyway. So
absolutely. Well, awesome. Well, nice work, man. I think this is going to be pretty exciting. I hope everybody has a good time listening to these interviews. And we'll get back on our regular podcast schedule, next week.
Excellent.
Yeah. Any other final thoughts on the interviews?
No. I'm looking forward to recording. That'll be 68 with Matt, Hillary, and yourself.
Yep.
So 68, and we'll actually be able to discuss our full Comic-Con experience, because I honestly don't know what the heck they did half the time because I barely saw them.
Awesome. Well, then we'll find out in episode 68. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Nerd Appropriate. We're on Facebook, Nerd Appropriate. We have a Google Plus. You can email us at Ash, Scott, Hillary with one L, or Matt at nerdappropriate.com. And I think that's just about it.
Awesome.
Cool. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.